I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole.
You hear me?
I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Questions. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all your stressing.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you are in the known world listening to this show and or podcast live on podcast a little bit later. This is another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And again, we are here for all of your mental health, community, attachment, relationships, needs, and everything else in between. Again, we thank you, thank you, thank you for continuing to support us. For those that would like to participate in the show, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions about anything that you hear, you can contact us on b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B. The number 2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, we would like to again thank WMUL as well as Marsh University for giving us this platform. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, ideas, or perspectives that you hear are solely ours. They are not represented or supported by Marsh University, by WMUL, any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors. They are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, as well as myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, I know this sounds bad, but take this advice at your own risk. And as Dr. Chapman always, always leads in and always tells us, while this may be therapeutic, this is not what?
Not therapy. You didn't pay us $200 and you're not on the couch.
This is not therapy. So again, we wish you all peace and blessings. We thank you for the continuing support. The support is overwhelming on and off campus. So again, we're just as best as we can trying to come up with different ideas, trying to create and talk about different topics. And just shifting up the format a little bit. Last week we had a really, really amazing conversation and interview with Mr. Will Chapman, who is the brother of Dr. Nate Chapman. And he talked about just sort of identity development, entrepreneurship, and what it takes, you know, the courage and the bravery that it takes to sort of leave where you are and to strike out and do your own thing. So that was inspiring, and it was a really, really great interview. And we're looking to do more of those in the future, having more interviews, having more guests, people telling their stories, more book writers on, more experts, and more community people who would just like to share their perspectives as well. And again, we do everything from mental health to love, relationships, attachment. So again, if you're interested in participating in the show and maybe being a guest, please shoot us an email. We'll go through it. One of us may give you a call and interview you, and then we'll let you know from there. So again, b2bpsych@gmail.com.
And also, you can put, just if you have topic ideas, you have things that you think that you'd like for us to talk about, you know, we'll sit through it. You know, we'll have our little radio meeting and think if it's something we want to bring. And so we're welcome. We welcome your ideas, and we love to hit topics you want to hear.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So with all that being said, let's rock and roll. So how was your week, sir, in sunny, sunny California? It snowed here in West Virginia. And as we know, we've taken this show coast to coast, Dr. Chapman. is in sunny California.
Well, it has been. I mean, it's still been a little bit chilly. I mean, it's not. We didn't get no snow. You know, thank goodness. I don't know if I do snow anymore. I mean, there was one time I used to do snow, and
aren't you from Michigan? What you mean you don't do snow?
yeah. I don't. You know. Yeah, I just don't do it anymore. It's just something I don't do anymore.
Somebody's become a part of the elite. They just don't do whenever you don't do natural weather patterns, you know, things that are just natural to the earth. You've taken the turn, ladies and gentlemen. So
yeah. A fellow Californian, we were talking about the sun, and see, the thing about the sun here, most days, I mean, it's been a little chilly, is that the sun works here, right? And in the winter, and it stays like Michigan and West Virginia, even though the sun's out, it's not really working, you know, and that's just a problem for me.
It's just there for light, you know.
Yeah.
But it brightens our day. So things got a little bit warmer. Everybody's got a little pepper in their step. Surprisingly, people are still obeying COVID protocols. I'm very proud of my West Virginians. West Virginia is leading the nation in getting out vaccines.
I did hear that. Good job, West Virginia.
Yeah, so we are things are looking up. You know, hopefully by summertime most people will be vaccinated, and hopefully we can move to a place that we can sort of start to live something like the life that we want to know. And I don't know if it will ever get there, but something like that.
Yeah, that's what I wonder. Do you think, I know it looks different in different states, being that you guys are almost like, you're doing real good with the vaccinations, but do you think summer we're going to be, you know, back in person in places, or maybe the fall?
No, not even close. No. I'm being optimistic, but it'll probably be late fall, next spring. Realistically, next spring, kids gonna be signing up for T. I mean, they signing up for T-ball now. But next spring, I think that next spring, next January, February, March, it'll be a calendar year from now. I think things will slowly start to look normal. You know what I mean? Kids will be playing basketball at the Y and stuff like that again. I don't know if it will. I just think that this is a process, and it's hard for people to, and everybody, you know, people are doing well, even with their frustrations. You know, they're wearing their mask. They may be cussing and fussing, but for the most part, people are still wearing their mask and kind of trying to do the right thing as best as they can.
I think it's interesting because I was looking at, Podbean. Shout out to Podbean. That's where you can find all of the recordings in case you want to go through. And I scrolled down all the way back to March 19th, and I was just looking at the topics, and there was one when it just came out, and some of those conversations we were having earlier about can people who are in lower socioeconomic status or less money afford to be sick. And that was like, we didn't even know, like, it was going to be almost a year. And
yeah, we was like, man, a couple of, you know, a month, 4 to 6 weeks of this, bruh, I'm gonna be nah. I think it was sometime in that summertime when I started to go, wow, we in this for the long haul.
It was, you know what else is crazy? I was watching Planet of the Apes series.
Yeah.
And the newer, the like kind of prequel one, the newer one. And you know, after they had the apes break out, there was a virus. And watching those movies is kind of traumatic now, because it's like, hey, you know, you see, and you, when you watch all the way to the last series, almost all the humans are, they've started to be extinguished because of the virus. I'm like, dang, this is too close to real. I need to turn this off.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at Netflix, though, they got a whole row of virus movies that are just there to keep you up at night and like tossing and turning, like everything from Contagion to Outbreak, you know, the old movie Outbreak, Contagion. I've seen, they're just a slew of them that are out now. So I guess they said, let's capitalize on it, you know, but those are the popular movies now. You know, apocalypse type of movies. I guess people are looking for sort of, if there is an apocalypse, what to do. How to deal with it, what to do, how to handle it. So I don't, maybe we're looking for what to expect if there is an apocalypse. I don't know, but A lot of those movies are really popular now. So I don't know, man, but I think people are, everybody, if you're listening out there, hold tight. I think things will get better. As things loosen up a little bit, I know that there was a sort of a downward spiral in regards to mental health. You know, depression started to set in, anxiety started to set in. We saw a rise in abuse in homes and stuff like that. So I wonder if those numbers, I haven't seen those numbers, but I wonder if they're stabilizing some in that. Obviously, things aren't normal, but, you know, people are still kind of, they're getting out a little bit. So I would love to see what those numbers are in regards to, have those numbers sort of stabilize? Or are they steady dropping in regards to depression levels, anxiety levels? You know, I think in the beginning it was hard for people to deal with. And I think with everything, you go through this sort of grieving period. And then after you see that you're stuck in a situation, you get stuck in this helpless hopelessness. And then people just kind of start to give up. So, again, that's not me saying that the depression, anxiety has gone away. I just wonder, has it kind of leveled off? Because people are like, okay, we're here. I'm here, we're here, and we just going to try to ride this out because there's nothing we could do.
I think that's an interesting question and something that would be fascinating to look at the data, because usually, generally, the whole idea of the hedonic effect is that people, no matter what happens to them, win the lottery, they lose a limb, they adapt to it over time. And so this would be one of those things, you know, it's just natural. You're going to go out, you're going to have your mask, and that's just part of the everyday thing. Outside of the things that have been exacerbated in terms of mental illness, I wonder, has that caused it to go down because people just have gotten used to it? Or maybe they took a different angle with like the learned helplessness kind of angle, where this is so bad, this is the way it's going to be, I'm just going to stay in defeat. And that's not minimizing depression or anxiety, but there's the two sides, you know, the one that kind of just adapts, even though they might've been down, and the one that just kind of, it stays the same or gets worse because it's never going to change.
Again, we're talking like researchers now. Like, that's that, because all of that speaks to those who are doing well. My mind instantly went to, what are you doing? What's different? That's all in comparing. I'm thinking, what's different? What are you doing differently? Our family structure's different. Temperament. Do you have coping skills? Do you have hobbies? How close-knit was your family before this happened? I wonder if families that were close-knit and that kind of sort of liked each other before this happened, is it a little easier to bear? Are families that liked each other and maybe we like each other because we ain't in each other's face all the time? You know, we joked about that with couples, you know. Couples were great and they loved each other. And all of a sudden they got stuck at home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Then we start to see what we're really made of, you know, like, now I got to look at you every day, all day. I don't have a break from work or anything. So I don't know. That's interesting. Maybe at some point we'll get back to that, but it'll be interesting to see what those numbers are. Yeah. So moving on and moving forward, what you got for us today, my friend?
All right, well, I thought maybe we'd like to talk about trends here. And I don't know what your Facebook feed has been looking like, but I've been seeing a lot of like pictures of people when they were like a baby and now they're grown. You know, they call it the then and now challenge, or the this is where it started and this is where we are. And I've been looking at all of it. It's just kind of interesting. I wasn't going to do it, right? I don't kind of get into these trends, some of them. I do some trends, y'all. But I usually don't do that one. But then I see on my mom's page, she got me up, man. She got me up there on the Cub Scout picture, the little two fingers up. And the then and now. But the now is like not even a current now. It's like 2016. I might look similar. But it's just funny. So it had me thinking like
maybe. Well, wait. Before you start, wait.
Yeah.
How do you feel about, let's stop here. How do you feel about challenges in general? Are you surprised at how willing people are to participate in challenges? I think that's something that surprised me the most. Anything or any challenge that comes out, people participate in it, no matter what it is, no matter how goofy, no matter how silly. You know, TikTok and these challenges have taken off. Do you think that is, and just to build on this to go to where you want to go, do you think that this is, people's willingness to participate in these challenges and do these things are a product of being stuck at home or having nothing to do or being in close quarters with people in COVID and trying to keep themselves busy so they don't go crazy. Or are just people like that? Do people just sort of just follow these things?
I think it's an interesting question because of the times, right? It's like, I think people, things tend to trend and they're happening a lot more on social media. And I think that was prior to COVID. But I think now that COVID's here, it makes the playing field even more intense and easier for things to catch fire on in the virtual world. So I think it's probably a little bit of both. I'm not surprised, you know, thinking about psychology and this semester I have the joy of teaching a behavioral class, like almost like fundamental behavioral. But it's basically this whole idea of classical conditioning, making those associations between people and trends. And when I think about how willing someone is to drink a Sprite because LeBron drinks it, that doesn't surprise me because I know the psychology behind it. So I think it's the same thing with these trends. Another thing I think is interesting are some of the things that are coming up now besides the then and now that are like trends that I don't know if they would really have worked, like Clubhouse, right? Like, I don't know if you heard about Clubhouse.
I've heard of it. I'm not a part of it, but I've heard of it.
All right. So people in my circle, it's like, it's all they talk about is Clubhouse. And I got an invite. So cool. Now I joined a Clubhouse. It does seem like it has some pretty cool functions. I haven't figured it out yet. But I wonder if part of it is you listen to audio and you can use it to network. And would that be such a big thing if people could actually go out and network? I think it's probably prime because of the time for that particular trend. So I think it's a little more.
Good deal. Okay, continue. Go ahead with the topic.
All right, so I wanted to know, I would like to know, people are looking at these are just pictures. The pictures, you know, they say pictures are worth 1,000 words, and basically probably people are trying to say, oh, I look similar to the way I looked then, or whatever the case may be. I wanted to know, if someone were to ask you, tell us the then and now, how you've changed in between then and now. Not about the picture, but just like how you've grown. You can pick wherever the then is you want. But enlighten us with some of your growth between that then and now. But do tell us what the then is.
We don't have enough time. I've grown tremendously in the last 2 to 3 years. My biggest leap, one of my biggest leaps, there's small changes and then there's huge leaps in my life. And one of these huge leaps in my life probably has been in the last 2 to 3 years. But from a child, from a young boy to now, well, I say from a young boy to my 20s, I'm 43. I was very optimistic as a kid. I was happy. I was optimistic. I felt like all things were possible. Mm. I liked school. I loved playing baseball. I was a good little athlete, you know. At least I thought I was anyway. you know, mama's yelling in the stands for you. You just think you're doing good, even if you know what I'm saying? Like, as a child, I missed those. I was carefree. Something happened when I hit middle school. And I think that something happens for a lot of kids, and particularly for a lot of young black men when we hit middle school. The way the world really works started to present itself to me in ways that I didn't know. And I think maybe my parents shielded from me when I was younger, when I was a baby, when I was 9, when I was 10. When I hit 12 and 13 and 14 years old, I got a little bit taller. I looked a little bit stronger. I got a little bit taller. And I noticed that just things changed. Hmm. It's like, what makes me reflect on this by myself is my son. My son sort of had the same experience when he got older. when he got older, he was maybe 13, and he came home and he said, "Dad, now I notice that when I'm talking to my friends that are girls, not girlfriends, but my friends that are girls, teachers come up in between us, or they come and talk to us, or they ask us, what are we doing?" So it's like something happens as you get older. And that's not the I think it's layered. I'm not necessarily saying that it's all race. I mean, I think that they're gender. It's just a lot of things. Like, as I got older, I started to see, wow, how the world is changing. And some of that optimism that I had as a kid slowly started to leave.
Wow.
For some degree. And then I had other experiences that were just tied to being a young kid. They were tied to being a young black kid also, okay? It's all just kind of layered. The optimism that it's funny, man. Like, I look back at pictures of me when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, and you can see this exuberance in my eyes,
you know?
And as I got older, I'm still smiling, but it's different. And what helped me notice it in my son was I saw the same patterns in my son. I could see pictures of him when he was a kid running around in a Superman outfit or whatever. Oh, I've embarrassed him now if he ever hears this. Oh, running around he was Iron Man for a year. Like, I had to wash this Iron Man suit every day so he could be Iron Man for a year. As he got older and taller, the world started to treat him differently. Now, this is, you know, the world started to treat him differently. And he started to notice these subtle differences being a boy. Being a black boy, and then being a tall black boy, because he's 6'3 now. So, and then watching TV and watching the news and everything just that's been happening in the cultural climate the last few years, I've tried to have more conversations with him, because I don't want to see that excitement leave him. But that's what's funny is, and again, I'm just talk about this piece so you can talk, and then I'll go back and talk about some other layers and other moments in my life. But when I think about here and now, that's one big transition, was from when I was a young kid to my 20s. When I look at pictures, I'm smiling, but it's not the same. I can remember being happy and carefree, and I felt like I could do anything as a child. You know what I mean? And then something happened in middle school that subtly changed. And I started to feel like I had to think a whole lot about where I was going and what I was doing and how I was doing and how I was looking. And all of those things preoccupied my mind to a point that nothing didn't feel as fun as it used to when I was a kid, when I was carefree. Now, that may just be a natural, that just may be something natural for all kids. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that because I'm a male or because I'm a black male, that's specific to me or specifically to black men. Maybe all kids go through that. Again, I'm just speaking from my experience. So it's interesting that was, when I think about here and now, that's one big change from my early years, my grammar school years, to my middle school and 20s.
Well, I got some follow-up questions. Man, I think it's a good lesson for the listeners is that when we're telling our story, we have the right to own our story. You know, I think I was saying something to somebody, I can't remember. I was qualifying it. Like, I was saying, like, well, you know, it's not necessarily because I'm a black male or this, that, and the other. And this person was just like, well, it may be, it may not be. It would be okay if it was. It's your story, you could tell it. That really went, that when I heard that, for some reason, it was like, oh, okay, well, let me tell my story. Tell my story the way it is. Cool. I really appreciate it. So I'll just drop that. Now, I'm curious, if you look back at that old, you know, you see this young, you know, looking forward to life. Not that you know, everybody, we know he looks forward to life now, but you had that innocence, and you compare it to these new knowledgeable eyes that really kind of knows the world. What's that like, seeing that difference?
You mean knowing, seeing the difference between how I felt and how I know the world really is now?
Yeah.
I I don't know. That's a good question. I can't find words to explain. I don't know. I just know that the safety felt nice. And I don't remember whatever that safety is. I didn't feel when I became a young adult, and I still don't feel now. As I'm not saying that I feel like something is going to happen to me today or tomorrow, but I'm saying whatever that safety is that I felt as a kid, that's lost. It was lost at some point.
Wow.
And it was those experience. And again, I attribute that safety to the teachers that I had as an elementary. I learned from, you know, a lot of the teachers that I had were older black women. So they, and the teachers then were sort of like an extension of your home. Like, my teachers would be like, you know, I will spank you and tell your mama I did it. I mean, that's against the law now, but but our teachers, if you did something wrong, they spanked you at school. And if you fell down and hurt yourself, they kissed you and they hugged you. And my teachers told us that we were special and that you were beautiful. Like, I can remember that at 6 and 7 years old, having teachers that did that. I had some other teachers that were not so nice too, but those are the kind of things I think that I had my parents at home. I had teachers that, you know, I had my friends in the community. That was a time that you could get on a bike and you could ride forever. You didn't worry about anything that happened to you. You know, my mother knew where my friends were, and she, you know, we knew to be home when the streetlights came home. And on Saturdays, we all watched wrestling and played sports all day and went to somebody's house and somebody's mom made us bologna sandwiches. Like, that being loved and insulated. You know what I mean? When we were kids, at some point something happened and that was lost. And what's interesting, it's not just me. I hear a lot of men talk about losing that at some point during their middle school years. Something happens as we get older that we don't feel that protection and that loss anymore. So I don't know. Something to think about. What are you thinking? So we're going to do a quick station identification, and we're going to take a quick break. Again, this is WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial. This is Dr. Hinton as well as Dr. Chapman with Brother to Brother. We're going to take a quick break, do some station identification. We'll take a quick break, pay some bills, and we will be right back.
I bet it sounds like I'm in a busy street right now. Oh, now I'm in a bustling newsroom. No, you got that story for me, Johnny? Now I'm in a sewer. I don't like it here. Now I'm surrounded by eternity! But I'm actually just in my home. Even being here, I can anchor news and make programming. The world is different. WMUL is different. Volunteer today. Find more information at marshall.edu/WMUL.
Instead of watching the news from home, listen to the news while on the way home.
Welcome to News Center 88.
Now on to our top story.
Weekdays at 5 p.m., News Center 88 broadcasts all the day's news, sports, and weather reports in 30 minutes. That's perfect timing for the afternoon commute. So stop wasting precious time at home and start getting informed while on the go. News Center 88, weekdays at 5, only on 88.1 WMUL.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
All right, we are back. Little station identification again. This is WMUO 88.1 FM. This is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And again, we are here for all of your mental health, attachment, and community needs. And we took a little break and we are back. So we're talking about the then and now challenge.
Yeah. And so Dr. Hinton was just telling us some about his. Then I still have a few more follow-up questions. Hey, one thing that I thought that you were saying when you're talking about the community, and we both know how important that community is. I know it looks a lot different now because of just the way that things are set up, family structures, and you also talked about the importance of your teachers. I think that's interesting because I think those early teachers, regardless of what community you're in, most people, I would guess if you polled, would remember the earlier teachers. And I think that has something to do with well, maybe the curriculum, even though it might be getting more intense nowadays, but it's more on social skills. It's more on these, whatever we call it, like soft skills early on. And I don't think people are feeling all that academic pressure and kids are being treated like humans. And I don't mean, okay, for all my teachers, I taught high school before. I'm not saying that we stop teaching them, like treating them like humans when they get to middle school and high school, but it's just that the pressure starts to build up. And all those other social circles become, it's all colliding at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, for me at least, from my younger years to my 20s, there was a safety when I was younger, and that kind of went away, and the way the real world works starts to happen. And a part of that is transitions in my life. I had to figure out what I was going to do. You know,
how's that for you?
Well, my mother and father was like, "We love you, but you can't stay here. it's too many grown folks in the house. You can't stay here. So you can get a job. You can go to the army. You're gonna go to school. You're gonna play baseball. But you're gonna do something. But you're not gonna stay here." So I knew that growing up. So early on, and I think both of my parents, shout out, I love them. They prepared me to be prepared to leave. I didn't feel. I was ready to. I was 17 when I left. I haven't lived at home since I was 17, and I struck out on my own. And you know what I mean? I mean, they were always there. Like if something happened, they wouldn't let me go under, you know. But for the most part, I was ready to be self sufficient at 17. I already knew that.
Yeah.
So now, so yeah, striking out on my own at sort of 17 and trying to pay. So I'm trying to figure out. What am I going to do? Do I want to be a doctor? Do I want to be a lawyer? Do I want to go to the army? You're trying to figure out all of this stuff.
Right.
And then you have to figure out how to function socially in the world as well. And does the world socially work for me the way it does for everyone? Like you're trying to figure all of this stuff out with the mind of a child. Mm-hmm. Even though chronologically you're an adult, emotionally you're still growing. The way you think about the world and how you reason. Was it our frontal lobes, which control inhibition and how to make good decisions, then fully developed to our mid-20s? So like you're trying to figure out, how do I make mistakes that I learn and grow from and not make too many big mistakes that I end up getting in real trouble? Like you're trying to figure out all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what my 20s was like. And in my mid to late 20s and 30s, that's when I went on a search for identity and trying to find myself. A search to figure out what is religion and spirituality. Like I said, asking myself those main questions. All of a sudden, I start to ask myself, why am I here? How am I here? What the hell is consciousness? How am I? For some reason, I started to ask myself those types of questions. So I started to ask myself, what is consciousness? What is identity? Do I have a purpose? If so, what is it? How do I find it? Is there a God? Why is it watching all this stuff happen? Like, I started asking myself, so from my 20s to my 30s, what's this search for identity, this search for self, and this search for spirituality? And I'll mind you, I'm still sifting through trauma, childhood trauma and stuff as well. So, and it wasn't until my late 30s and 40s that I slowly started to figure stuff out. But at that point, You know, I got bad knees and bad. That's kind of how it go. By the time you figure it out, you on the downslope and you got one leg in the grave and you're like, okay, how do I make the best out of the rest of the time I got? Yeah. So that's sort of my, in a nutshell, my evolution, you know, went from excited about the world to not necessarily pessimism, but this sort of, how do I protect myself and how do I figure out who I am? Yeah. Then I went on this search for the self and trying to find myself and trying to figure out what is religion and what is spirituality. And then when I started to figure those things out, then, like I said, the last few years, I took this major leap once I started to get grounded in sort of who I am and what does religion and what does spirituality mean to me. Yeah. And I think that the issue is, I'll say this and then I'll let you go. All my life, I've always, somehow we're always, and I think we said this before on some other stuff that we did before. The biggest problem that I had in my younger years was I was always waiting on somebody to validate my greatness. For some reason, and I know this sounds narcissistic to some degree, but in the back of my head, even as a kid, I always knew that there was something special in me. Now, I don't know where that comes from, and I don't know why I thought that, and to even think that as a child. But the problem was I was always looking for somebody else to validate it for me, for it to manifest, so it could manifest. I was always waiting on some preacher, some pastor, some prophet, somebody to walk up on a park bench or something. And I think that held me back to some extent for a while. And I had to go on this search for identity and search for myself to realize that I never needed, and none of us need anybody else to validate who we are. You know, none of us ever need anybody to validate who we are, or the greatness that we have in us, or the capacity that we have to do good, or to love, or to do big things, or to do great things. You know, we're always taught it's not good until the coach tells you it's good, until mom tells you it's good, until the teacher gives you a gold star. Like, we're trained and ingrained to wait on somebody else to say you're the MVP. It's why I like Chad Ochocinco. Once he crossed up, he gave himself a gold jacket. It's like, that's something they made up. I already know I'm great. You know, I set my own benchmarks. I have my own goals, and bam, he bought himself a gold jacket, whether he gets into the Hall of Fame or not. He's like, I'm already a Hall of Fame in my eyes. I don't need somebody else to tell me who I am and who I can be and what I can do and how great I am. And it took me going through a lot in my 20s and early 30s to sort of figure that out. And once I figured that out, like, everything just started to make sense and everything started to fall in place.
Yeah, no, I can see that, man. Like, it's like being able to have the ability to recognize that. And I think it's interesting when you said, this is going to sound narcissistic, or when I say this, or grandiose. And I think most people would probably think that way when they would get ready to compliment themselves. Also, it's because somewhere in society, someone has told us, you can look down on yourself, but it's not okay for you to look up on yourself.
Yeah.
Or if you do, you know, you can't think too highly of yourself. Don't get no big head. And there are a lot of big-headed folk out there, for sure. But the point is, I think that in between, when we try to stay in between, we go the reverse. Now, yeah. I'm not good. I need, in order for me to be good enough, I need you to tell me that, or I need the report card to tell me that, or I need the coach to tell me that. I need to be on the starting lineup. I need to, whatever it is. And that's a hell of a process. How do you think, you said that the 20s really helped with that, or going through the 20s and 30s, but if you were to condense that down to, like, I don't know, some pearls for other people on how you were able to do that, like, what really helped solidify that for you? What would you say that was?
I think for me, and I don't know if I'm just, it's just the cloth that I'm cut from. I never stopped seeking, and I was never afraid to question my reality. I was the kid at church that they was like, put your hand down. I was never afraid to question and to ask and to grow. And I always keep myself in a position to believe that I always remind myself that you don't know everything. And I'm open to all perspectives and all ideas because I know I don't know it all. And when I put myself in that position to start the process of examining myself and who I am and to examine my reality, and then I start to say to myself, these are the things that my parents gave me. Just because it was good for them, are these things good for me? Do they help me survive? Do they help me thrive? You know, I always say that that's a problem. I think that's a problem in our society, is that the thing that I always say is, I think that we always try to use, we try to solve new school problems with old school solutions. You know, the reason that all revolutions are led by young people is because young people, they live and breathe what's happening now. And sometimes older people's perspectives and ideas are just outdated. They don't work in the here and now. Mm. So, but I digress. Like, for me, what started the process was I wanted to know that when I looked in the mirror, I wanted to be comfortable with who I was. And I wanted to know that I was who I was because I chose to be this way. And not, I just wasn't a carbon copy of my parents. If I were a Christian, I wanted to know that I went out and I read this stuff for myself and that I searched. And it's mine because it's mine, not because this is what my mom did and this is what her mom did and this is what her mom did. Like, I don't know what made me think that way or what spurred those thoughts or those ideas. But identity, which was why when I pursued a doctorate, that's why my subfield was identity. Like, I think that is the most important thing that anybody can do, is find themselves. But a part of the problem that I see is, what is it that make, why would any of us question our reality? Birds of a feather flock together. Our parents did it and they're alive. Birds of a feather flock together. We surround ourselves with people like us. So the way we think and the way we feel and the way we live and the way we love is our normal. So none of us are ever in a position to even question, to even think about questioning it, because everybody does it this way, right? So, but I don't know what led me to a space and a place to question, but I was like that as a kid. My father would go, stop. You're going to be a lawyer or something. You talk too much, like I'm talking too much now. He'd be like, stop. Just stop. Stop asking.
Now you got a radio show.
Stop asking me questions. Like, there was just always some seed of something in me that was always questioning and always searching and always needed to know. That's where it started for me. And I just turned it inward. Whatever that is, I turned it inward.
That seed just really needed the right environment to grow and took some time. It's like, part of it is like you they were trying to stifle that seed. You know, it's funny when you say birds of a feather flock together, because I think that is true. And I also think sometimes you're like the duck that ends up with geese. And you're expected to flock with them, but you're not geese. You know, you're like, you end up in a flock that you don't necessarily fit completely in because you're different.
Yeah.
And what happens is they try to, you are a bird of our flock. So you need to be just like us, because they can't recognize, because it's too different, that you are meant for other things. That's the real struggle for people that get in that situation. And I think it's happening often in our worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think for me, it's important to reflect on growth. It's important for you to, for me, you know, something, and I talk about my kids a lot. Every night I tell them, before you go to bed, you look at yourself in the mirror. You ask yourself, was I the best brother or best sister I could be? You know, was I the best friend I could be? And if not, we all make mistakes. It's okay. Every day that we wake up is another day that we're one decision away from changing everything in our lives or being the person that you want to be. But never stop, as best as you can, calling yourself to the carpet. You know, and again, that's something that I didn't really start to do until I got older. just because I was working through so many issues and traumas and inadequacies and insecurities and all of this kind of stuff. But it took me 40 years to get there. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. Not being afraid. You know, I heard Dick Gregory say something once years ago. Rest in power, Dick Gregory. And I said, you heard me say it before. Why would you run away from your problems? Why would you run away from your demons is what he said. He said, I run towards mine. At least I can, it won't hit me in the back of the head. At least I can see what's coming. At least I can see what I'm fighting. So from there, I think that myself included, you have to, part of what I want to do is be the best version of who I can be as possible. And I can't do that if I continue to pull these bag of rocks and these traumas from my childhood or from my adolescence or whatever. So again, a part of that process in my 20s and my 30s, and really in my 30s, was doing that work, facing my traumas, facing my insecurities, facing my pain, facing the things that make me sad, and then trying to see how it manifests in my life and how it affects other people around me, and asking myself, is this the person I want to be? And how can I fix these things to be a better person for myself, a better person for the community, a better person for my family? And that's hard. Like I said, it took me 10 years to really scratch the surface of that, like that process. And it's hard. It's hard facing who you really are. Yeah. And some people believe, what I learned is that some people believe they're a good person because they do some good things. But are you hear what I'm saying? Yeah. Because I do some good, because we convince ourselves that we're good people, myself included, is because I do great things. Not really looking at our lives in totality. And that's when I started to, again, I didn't get here until my 40s. Are my intentions pure in all that I do? And what are the things that I do that are, what are some of the things that I may do that are fed by insecurities or pain or selfishness or narcissism? It's hard, man. It's hard. It's hard to look at those cracks and creases in your identity and not make an excuse for it and say, this is who I am. And I have to figure out how to change this.
Yeah. And I think that's a couple things before I forget them. Remind me to come back to that one. But I think some other things, as people, I think what's so powerful for people that are listening is when you keep coming back to 40 years. Well, let me just remind people, you know, what was Jesus? I think he was 30 when he started his ministry. But Moses, he's stuck in the wilderness for 40 years. It takes different amounts of growth to produce whatever your ministry is. And for those folk that are not church folk, you know what I mean. It could be something. I don't have to be like preaching to people. Whatever your gift is can come out in a different way and a different time series. And I think it's also interesting what you said about trying to look at yourself and figure out where you're at, because I think people can be on different sides of the seesaw on this one. Either they don't really take a good look because they're too, I won't even say compassionate or forgiving. They just don't look at themselves. That's not compassion. Or the other side is they're too critical. And to really change and grow, it's like assess what's going on with you, but don't stay on it so long that you're like really being punitive and punishing yourself, because that does nothing. You have to look at it, but you don't have to punish yourself. Okay, I that's something that I could have changed. How can I change it? Okay, I'm going to move on to the next plan and keep it moving. Where some people just get stuck and, okay, I did that wrong. I must punish myself. Because the only way that I know I'm getting better is if I punish myself. Because that's the lesson that they've learned. You know, we don't tell you when you're doing a good job. We tell you when you're doing a horrible job so you can stop doing a horrible job so you can be great. We're doing you a favor. That's kind of like how people go about
that. That is so important. You need to don't skate over that. You said that quickly. Say that again. That is so important.
Yeah, so we spend time trying to punish people when they're not producing a certain result, because we believe punishment is what makes people great. When people sometimes really get stuck in that punishment cycle and they take that in and they start punishing themselves, and that's why they can't be great, because they're stuck in that cycle. Oh, I was so horrible at that. Man, I should have been better. 10 months later, man, I was so horrible at that. Man, I should have been better. But they have made no movement.
Yeah.
And they're stuck.
Yeah.
So I think you talking about looking at yourself, and if you can do it and snip it and say, like, you know what? Yeah, man, I could have been better at that. Yeah, you know, I was kind of egotistic with this. So, yeah, I could have. Okay, so what do I want to do now? You know, how do I want to be better? That's so different than, like, you know, you should have done this.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, for me anyway, a part of it is, I always say I don't make other people's problems my problems. So like if somebody's mad for the day and they take out, let's say somebody's mad, they had a bad day at home and they brought it to work and they snap at me. I mean, that's your problem. I'm not going to let your anger or whatever you're dealing with disrupt my energy. I don't make other people's problems my problems. You're going to be mad over there on your own. I'm going to continue to have a good day. Yeah. I'm saying that to say, as I evolve, I look at myself as a new person. So when I look back at the old me, while there were things that I've regretted and there are things that I've apologized for or whatever the case may be, I don't hold it because that was somebody different. I think that each time you grow, each time you learn something new, you become a different person. I literally think it changes your, it changes you cognitively, it changes your physiology, it changes your DNA. Every time you learn, you grow, and you become a different person. So the question is, that was somebody else. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm realistic. It doesn't mean that, you know, the consequences of things I've done in the past can't catch up with me. I get that. That's just how things work. And I think that that's one of the things that stop people from trying to grow, is like they make a choice to change, and then all of a sudden, you know, their past catches up with them. They were like, man, why did I even try to change in the first place? You know, and it's just, you know, for me, I think that changing and growing and evolving and becoming as best of a person as I can be, I do it because it's the right thing to do, not because I'm trying to avoid some punishment or reap some reward. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that that has to be where it comes from. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, that whirlwind don't hit you in the back of the head on the way down, you know, as you move forward. But I don't know. It all, like I said, when I say this, it all makes sense in my head. I don't know if it makes sense when I say it.
No, I think, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think that whole philosophy and people getting to see the chapters of the then and now, from childhood to the 20s to the 30s to the 40s, it's a complete picture. And so for some people, it might be like one of the stories that they can use to help them in their own story. And so one of the things you said reminded me, for whatever reason, of my dog. Okay, so, you know, the thing that animals have that we don't have is that they don't really get stuck up on the past. You know what I'm saying? Like, I tell my dog, hey, no, don't do that. And whatever, he don't like the way I said no. He might be mad at me for a second, but it's literally a second. 2 seconds later, he done forgot about that. He will go on with his day, whatever goal-directed behavior he has. He wants to get the bone, he wants to get the tissue. He can go ahead and get it. And as simple as that analogy sounds, the reason that we can't keep moving forward towards other goals is because we get distracted and hammered down by these past things. I think you're talking about evolving and really seeing yourself as being a new creature.
Yeah.
So even though the past things may catch up with you, that gives you a lot of space. It gives you a lot of freedom. You know, like, okay, I've evolved. That was me yesterday. Okay, if I had a speeding ticket, I'm gonna pay it. But I'm moving on. You know.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if now that we're thinking about this, and man, I hate that this is something we got to make a part two out of, because you're not getting out of this, my friend. You are taking a turn. So you do know everyone knows where we will start next week. It will be Dr. Chapman's turn to talk about his evolution. You're not skating away from this, my friend. I think a larger part of, and I know this sounds bad if any of my family, a larger part of what helped me started to question was leaving my environment. Like I said, at 17, I went to school. I went to University of Tennessee in Martin. Shout out UT Martin. I moved out of Memphis. And I moved into an entirely different world with different personalities and different identities. Like, I got friends that have never left our neighborhood, that have never left Whitehaven. I got friends that have never left Memphis. So it's like leaving and having those experiences. And then I left there. I came to West Virginia. And then I left West Virginia and I went to D.C. And I left D.C. and came back to West. So like having those at such a young age when I'm in the process of trying to find myself, you know, I gave myself the leeway to try new things.
Yeah.
I gave myself, I know that's weird, but I feel like I had to give myself permission. It's okay to date this person because they don't look like you. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to make these friends. And it's okay to try this out. It's like giving myself that permission in this new environment was so, when I experienced new environments, for me was so important for growth and evolution. And I grew up predominantly Christian. And somebody's talking some Buddhism stuff over here. It's okay to listen. You know what I'm saying? Like like I said, like what do they say? Like chicken or ribs. Eat the meat and throw away the bones. You don't have to believe everything everybody says. If there are bits and pieces that are useful, take the bits and pieces that you like and you throw the rest away. But it's okay. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if I would have felt as if it was okay had I stayed in my city and never left. I wonder what my evolution would have, how it would have gone, who I would be. I definitely wouldn't be, I don't think I would be as open-minded as I am now.
Yeah.
And open to new experiences and open to different things. I wonder, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. I do know having these different experiences, going to these different places definitely played an important part in sort of me searching and being willing to be open to life and other experiences and other perspectives that was necessary for me to grow.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So, man, we up at 10 o'clock already. Like Daddy said, I talk too much. But again, we as always, we like to thank those who tune into our conversations. Dr. Eddie Nathaniel Chapman has not gotten off the hook. He will be enlightening us next week at the beginning of the show.
He said my whole name. I don't even like my first name. Oh boy. Okay.
That means we're serious. When we say somebody's whole name on this show, we are dead serious people. But he's going to give us not everything, but just some general insights on how he felt as a kid, how he felt in his 20s, how he feels now. You know, so just the basic evolution before we move on and move forward. But for everybody out there, as we always say, peace and blessings to you all. Questions, comments, or suggestions, b2bpsych@gmail.com, b2bpsych, b2bpsych@gmail.com. We thank you for your continued support. Again, as always, we always continue to thank WMUL and Marshall University for giving us this platform to talk about mental health and to talk about identity and to talk about the self and finding the self and community issues and those things. We really appreciate it. Again, they don't have to, but it was something that they encouraged. It was something they pushed and they encouraged, and they continue to support Dr. Bailey, the communications department. Shout out to Dr. Bailey here. Has been amazing. Has been absolutely amazing in allowing us the freedom and leeway to talk about some of these mental health issues, depression and anxiety and what's going on in society. And I don't think that I or a lot of people thank him enough. He really does a lot for this place. He really does a lot for this station, and peace and blessings to him. But if I could just say one thing again, as I said before, for me, I think the most important thing you can do in this life is find yourself. And the process of finding yourself and finding ourselves is scary. Because on that journey, you may have to face some demons and you may have to face some trauma. But just, you know, I think it's important to know, it's important to face those things so that you don't take those things into your relationships. And also some of those things could be in some way, shape, form, or fashion hindering you from living the best possible life and being the best possible you can be. So, again, as I always say, You know, don't take anything to the grave with you. Graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that you're doing, you know, die empty. Make sure you're doing the things that set your soul on fire, and make sure the people that you love know that you love them. And peace and blessings to you. And Dr. Chapman always takes us out.
Well, I think we had a great story from our brother, Dr. Keelan Hinton. And whenever you listen to stories, it's an opportunity to learn lessons from someone else. And hopefully those lessons you don't have to learn yourself. So here we have a story of, you know, a young boy from Memphis, Tennessee, that grew up to be a doctor, professor, an inspirer. You know, he won't tell you, but a lot of people want to take his classes. It's more than a little bit, just so you know. What I would say to you is, wherever you are on your journey, we all have stories. We may not all be sharing our stories over the airways, but someone's listening to your story. They're listening to it by the things that you say in your everyday interactions. They're watching your story on a Facebook feed or Instagram feed or Snapchat, or you know, all the social media things that are going on, all those feeds, just fill the rest in. They're watching. And someone, your story is not for you. Your story is for someone else. I feel like some of y'all out there are probably scared to tell your story. I understand there's lots of reasons. You probably have to blurp out some names so you don't offend anybody. I understand. But telling your story, if you remember your story is not for you, you don't know how many other people you might reach. It's the same thing with your gifts. Your gifts are not about you. They're for other people. And so if I can just employ you to tell your story, use your gifts, we'll talk to you next time. You can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold.